Hello, and welcome to the American Marketing Association's Marketing Power Podcast on the Complaint Economy, How Twitter and Facebook Are Changing Consumer Psychology. I'm your host, Nancy Bacala, Director of Online Content for the AMA, and we're very excited to welcome our special guest today, Dr. Guy Winch, to the program. Dr. Winch is a licensed psychologist and author of The Squeaky Wheel, Complaining the Right Way to Get Results, Improve Your Relationships, and Enhance Self-Esteem. He received his doctorate in clinical psychology from New York University and completed a postdoctoral fellowship in family and couples therapy at NYU Medical Center. He's been using complaints as a therapeutic tool in his psychotherapy practice for more than a decade. Dr. Winch also writes the popular Squeaky Wheel blog on psychologytoday.com and has written extensively on the topic of consumer psychology and customer service. Learn more about Guy and his website, guywinch.com, and follow him on Twitter, at Guy Winch. Guy, welcome to the program, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me on the program.
Great. Well, the first thing I would like to talk with you about is your assertion that because of the rapid adoption of Twitter and Facebook that has been going on in our society, that you think that has really changed consumer psychology. Can you explain in what ways you think these particular social media channels are impacting consumers?
Yes, I'd be glad to. Our consumer psychology, and especially our complaining psychology, is a general mindset that most consumers have, which involves their beliefs and their thoughts about companies and how much companies are interested in their complaints or care about them. And unfortunately, until now, our complaining psychology has been rather defeatist in its nature. In other words, we tend to believe that companies don't care about our complaints. They don't care about hearing what we have to say as consumers. And, for example, studies show that when consumers are dissatisfied with a certain kind of product, only 5% of them will voice a complaint to the company itself, while 95% will not because they believe it will require too much time and effort. But paradoxically, at the same time, they will go and voice that same complaint to 10 to 16 of their friends and acquaintances, instead of spending just a few minutes sending an email to a company that might actually resolve the matter. So we felt really defeated by our complaints and by companies' ability to respond to them, and a large part of that is in our heads as consumers. What Twitter and social media, Facebook, are doing is that they're allowing another channel for consumers to complain, which does not involve a lot of time and effort. Twitter is limited to 140 characters. It could not be less time and effort. So having that venue, being able to put a status update or a link on Facebook or a video on YouTube, has allowed consumers to bypass the toll-free numbers and the fears of getting put on hold or disconnected and just voice their complaints in a much more direct way. And so they're beginning to do that. You see people who would not ordinarily voice their complaints in such a way using social media to do that. And that's changing their psychology because their expectations are now that companies will respond to that in some cases.
Great. Now, you did mention, obviously, Twitter and Facebook, which are two of the key channels. Have you found that people complain differently or are complaining about different things on Twitter and Facebook? Obviously, Twitter only has 140 characters, but I'm wondering if, from your perspective, the substance of the complaints or the nature of them are different on Twitter and Facebook.
Well, unfortunately, I think a little bit, but not really enough yet. In other words, these mediums are still new, and the defeatist attitude people have, those mindsets still persist. So most people, when they have a complaint, will go to Twitter and just write, "Oh, this company sucks," as opposed to voicing a specific problem they had. Same with Facebook, you know, "Oh, I hate whatever company." And most people are doing that, rather than actually voicing a complaint about something happened. My flight got canceled, I got charged a late fee, this product doesn't work the right way. So unfortunately, people are still using it primarily to slam companies, but at least they're saying something. At least they're notifying, you know, companies could be listening to that and pick it up from there. My hope is that going forward, people will use those vehicles more specifically. A lot of companies monitor Twitter and Facebook and such, and they even have specific addresses in which you can, like, you know, Delta Airlines has Delta Assist. So if you write on Twitter, at Delta Assist, "Help me, I just got stranded," that will be monitored. So the more consumers start to learn that if they do it the correct way, they're likely to get a productive response, I hope, at least, that a lot of how they use these tools will change to a more productive manner.
Great. Now, you did mention, you know, Dell. I know we hear about a couple other companies. Zappos comes to mind, a couple other companies who are actually using Twitter and Facebook or social media channels effectively as a customer service tool, but really probably not enough companies are doing it the right way. What advice or recommendations do you have for companies who would like to use social media as as an effective customer service tool? What do they need to do?
Well, I think there's so much they can do with that. For example, with Zappos. Zappos does a great job about monitoring mention of Zappos. And it's not just complaints, by the way. A few months ago, I ordered something from Zappos, and they expedited my shipping. And I wrote, "Oh, thank you, Zappos, for expediting my shipping." I tweeted something like that. And within 3 minutes, there was a response from them saying, "Oh, shucks, we're happy to do it." Now, that was even more impressive than them responding to a complaint, because it really gives you the feeling that, wow, they're really listening. They really are listening to customers who mention them and want to respond, even in something as silly as that, that really did not require a response.
Mm-hmm.
So that I found really, really impressive. And every company has the opportunity to do that and to monitor these channels and to respond to their customers, not just the angry ones, but the ones who mention them in any kind of way. Because when people are just tweeting about, "Oh, I had a great flight with Continental," or something like that, and suddenly they hear back from Continental going, "Thanks, it's a pleasure to serve you," that's really impressive to people. And it's such a simple thing to do, but it will really make people feel, wow, this company listens to me. That's a company I can trust more, because if I have a problem, they'll listen as well.
You know, market research researchers now are increasingly looking to social media channels to monitor and obtain and mine customer insights. What do you think they can learn from online customer complaints, and how can they mine that data for better decision-making on behalf of their client or brand?
Well, here I think there really are amazing opportunities, because, first of all, they can find out what their customers like, what they don't like, what they get, what they don't get. And, you know, for example, if a new product comes out, customers will tweet about, "Oh, I love this part, I don't love this part, I wish it had this, but it's great that it has that." So they have ready-made focus groups that are telling them what they think about their products online, on blogs, on Facebook, you know, and on Twitter, really various places. So it's a very rich field to mine. But even more than that, you know, for example, I'll just use an example, the iPad. Many companies now, Samsung and others, have tablets coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So if companies decided, "I'm not just going to monitor what people are saying about my tablet, I'm going to monitor what they're saying about all the different tablets," then that would be an incredibly rich source of data, because then they would know what are the features customers are universally pleased with, which are the ones they universally wish their tablet had. I mean, it's really valuable information in any possible way. What are the battery life beyond which they start complaining? What is, you know, you could really get anything for monitoring these channels. And again, not just monitoring your own products, but monitoring the competition's products, what they're saying about the competition, what the competition isn't providing, that you have a product in development that you could provide. So if you mine that data in the correct way, there would be a lot of information there that people could get.
And what do you think companies how are they getting it wrong when it comes to using social media channels for customer service management?
I think the most important thing is that consumers have a fine relationship with companies, usually, until something goes wrong. And as in any relationship, when there's a rupture in the relationship, when there's a problem, there's a fork in the road. Either the relationship will be mended, and by mending it, it will become stronger, or our ways will part. Now, complaints are that fork in the road, and then it is up to companies to mend that relationship. First of all, to find out about it, because as I mentioned earlier, 95% of people might not even mention it. But they might mention it on Twitter, etc. So first, to elicit complaints so they can find out about it. And then secondly, to do something about mending that relationship. Our research shows that when companies do a good job in managing complaints correctly, then actually it can increase customer loyalty from where it was beforehand. In other words, if a customer had a complaint but feels the complaint was well handled by the company, they become more loyal to the company as a result. This is true in any of our relationships. When we have an argument with somebody, with our spouse, for example, we can fix those arguments and mend the problem. Those relationships are stronger because they've been tested, and it gives faith to both people that if we have a problem, we can manage it. So it's a very powerful thing. These are wonderful opportunities to increase customer loyalty, and those customers spread incredibly positive word of mouth. When a customer complains and gets a response that has satisfied them, that really took care of the complaint, that made them feel that the company was listening, they will go and tell a lot of people about that. And they will tell a lot of people about it if it doesn't go well. So it's really a huge difference between how companies handle these complaints in terms of the result they're going to get.
You know, social media does make it easy for customers to complain, but the onus obviously is still on the company to resolve the issue. How is this trend, you think, impacting expectations of the customer when it comes to customer service? And, you know, what specific steps can a company take to keep these customer expectations in check? Because while they would love to respond, you know, in an immediate way, you know, sometimes their organizations are not structured that way yet. So how can they respond, you know, make good use of these channels for customer service, but still keep those expectations at a reasonable level?
So first, I think there's big power in any kind of response. In other words, to get a response to a tweet or a YouTube or a video or a Facebook, any kind of response of, we hear you, you can reach customer service at this phone number, even if it then has to go through all the automated menus and such. But even that response, the we hear you response, is very powerful. And in terms of CRM, that should not be that complicated to set up. You know, that should be something that companies do. I mean, companies cannot ignore the fact that, you know, this is the 21st century. You know, in that movie Network, where the character opens the window and shouts, "I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore." Well, that's Twitter today, and that's Facebook today, and all their followers on Twitter and their friends on Facebook are the neighbors that are listening to it. But today, not like in the movie, the companies are neighbors too. They could be hearing it just as well, and just as well saying, "Oh, you know what? Sorry about that. Call me." And even if the call me part is yet to be, you know, is yet ideal. But just responding, just letting people know, we hear you when you have a problem, or here's how to contact us, rather than hiding contact information, that is a hugely important step, and it's not an expensive one. Now, the thing is that companies will pay in their bottom line if they don't do this, because they will lose customers. The more and more companies are doing this, and more are, they can't afford not to, because their competition is, and not only their competition, perhaps, but other areas, and so customers are expecting it more and more, and they will continue to expect it more and more. So if your company is behind in having the kind of CRM that can monitor these feeds and monitor the Internet in this way, it's going to start to cost you. And in terms of setting expectations, you should set them where you can deliver them. But the most basic one is that you will hear and respond to someone saying, here's how to contact us. It's the most basic level of response that I think every company, if they don't have, and many do not have, they should really think of implementing very soon, because it's going to cost them dearly not to do that.
Oh, that's a great point. You know, researchers are obviously looking online to find customers who would either serve as great subjects for focus groups or could, you know, provide valuable insights on a brand. But how can companies turn, you know, some online haters and complainers into these brand advocates who can serve in that capacity?
Well, some of them are going to be convertible, some not. There is a subset of the population who are oppositional. And they I mean, when you say the haters, that's what I consider the haters. In other words, the haters are haters. These specific people I'm talking about, they are looking for this thing to hate. So if this company doesn't provide them enough fodder to hate, they will look for another company that does, rather than say, oh, you know what, I'm no longer a hater. So some of these people cannot be appeased. They're in it for the hating, and if it's not your company, they'll go to another. So frankly, if it's your company, yes, give them good reason to go to another. But another subset of them are people who just got severely disappointed or who are very frustrated. I usually give this example that if somebody buys a video camera and the video camera doesn't work well out of the box, and they call the company and they go, you know, I just bought this and it doesn't work. The company could say, wow, we're really sorry. Here's our replacement policy. But what if that person took it out of the box and the first thing they recorded was the birth of their first child, and that didn't work? Mm-hmm. So in that sense, they might be haters because they're hugely disappointed. What it cost them for that camera not to work is significant. And when they call the company has to have the training for their frontline representatives to not say, oh, okay, sorry, here's our replacement policy, but to say, oh, my goodness, we are so sorry that happened. That's really terrible. And that, oh, my goodness, is very valuable. I myself once called many times. One time I called, it was a cable company, and I told them about something I was trying to record that didn't work that was very important to me. And the person said, oh, wow, I'm so sorry. I can't tell you how much that oh, wow meant. Mm-hmm. And oh, wow was cheap.
Right. Absolutely. You know, in your book you talk about an interesting concept called creating a complaint sandwich. I was wondering if you can discuss for our listeners what ingredients you think are needed to make that sandwich.
Well, a complaint sandwich is a simple tool that will make any complaint more effective. And by the way, this works when we complain to our spouse or when we complain to our friends or our kids or a customer service representative or a colleague at work. It really works in every kind of situation. The goal of it is that when as people, when somebody complains to us, even if we're trained customer service professionals, we naturally get defensive. It's just a natural instinctive response. So the burden of the complainer is to get their complaint through those defenses so the person can actually hear what we're upset about. So the sandwich structure is the way to do that. The first slice of bread in the sandwich is a positive statement I call the ear opener. And the idea of starting with a positive statement is to do just that, to keep the ears of the complaint recipient open to the meat of the sandwich, which is our actual complaint. So we should start with something positive, such as, you know, you've been a customer for a long time, but, or if it's to a spouse, you know, honey, I know you're making a lot of efforts in this regard. However, you start with something positive. The meat of the sandwich should be lean. In other words, we don't need to take a running start and mention everything the company or the person has done wrong over the past 10 years. It doesn't serve our purpose. We're trying to make a simple point without overwhelming the other person. So keep it really specific. Here's the incident. Here's what happened. Let's not marinate our meat in anger or attitude, because when we're angry, when we have a sharp tone of voice, when we talk in a high-pitched voice or use staccato kind of sentences, all it does is distract the person. It rivets the person onto our anger and our attitude, and then their attention goes away from the actual message that we're trying to convey. So it behooves us to try and stay calm, to calmly represent in a lean, meat kind of way what the complaint is and what we want from them. So I would like to get a refund. So I would really like an apology. So I would need a hug, whatever that would be in the scenario. And then the second slice of bread is the second positive statement. I call it the digestive. And the idea is there that that is the spoonful of sugar that makes the medicine go down. It helps the person digest our complaint. By finishing with something positive, we're implying, so if you just do this thing we asked you to do, all will be well. And that's hugely motivating for the other person because it keeps it simple. Oh, I just do this and we're done. As opposed to, well, but then they'll still be angry because they still sound angry. And you know what I mean? So the digestive is really important. So that's the structure of the sandwich. You start with something positive, simple delivery of the complaint, end with something positive.
Great. And lastly, you also address in your book the issue of some consumers' fear about complaining directly to companies. But I'm wondering, what about the fear some companies might have in dealing with complaints? Do you have any advice for them? Do you find that companies are just sort of avoiding the issue of online complaints overall and because they're fearful of the negative backlash?
Well, look, I mean, not to be harsh, but I think that companies who are afraid of complaints are afraid out of ignorance. In other words, they don't understand, whoever those executives are, don't understand a couple of vital things. Number one, those complaining customers will go around spreading incredibly negative word of mouth about your company, whether you listen to their complaint or not. But the only way you can stop them from doing that and actually convert that negative word of mouth into positive word of mouth is listening to their complaints. So it's not as if you're opening Pandora's box. Pandora's box is open. They will go around saying those things about you. The question is, do you want to try and convert them into people who will say positive things or not? So I really think it's ignorance when companies are afraid of complaints because it's kind of in denial of the fact that it's actually happening. It is happening. It is happening more than you know. Like I said, customers will much more quickly go and tell all their friends about something that went wrong before they tell a company. That is already happening. You are already losing customers without knowing it because they're just walking out without telling you. Do you want to stop the bleeding? It costs you more to recruit a new customer, by far, than to keep the old one by having better complaint handling. So in terms of your bottom line, the problem is it's hard to quantify these things in dollars and cents. All these customer service investments always seem nebulous to some executives because they don't seem to have an immediate return on investment because it's word of mouth. It's a long-term customer. The return will come in a year, not in that quarter. So that's why a lot of executives have problems implementing these things because they're short-sighted and ignorant about what they think they're doing with these complaints. But they really have to get on the ball because complaints are the best opportunities companies have to fixing something and to converting dissatisfied customers into truly loyal ones.
That's a great, great point. You know, all of these have been really great recommendations about a new way of looking at insights gained from consumer complaints. We've been talking to Dr. Guy Winch. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for listening to this edition of our AMA podcast series. I hope it's been a good learning and listening experience. Look for information on other upcoming podcasts by visiting marketingpower.com/podcasts, and make sure you sign up for the RSS feed on Marketing Power so you're aware of all of the podcast series available to you. For information about the book, The Squeaky Wheel, Complaining the Right Way to Get Results, Improve Your Relationships, and Enhance Self-Esteem, and how to purchase a copy, visit the online AMA bookstore. Until next time, I've been your host, Nancy Bacala. Thank you for joining us.